humble our hearts before Almighty God. Father in heaven, we come before you on this special time, the first day of the feast. We look to you for the meaning and understanding of this day and this week, and we pray, Almighty Yahweh, that what you have prepared for us as far as the spiritual food, that we would understand and gain a firmer grasp of what you have given as a lessons for each of us, both physically and spiritually, as we follow in the footsteps of Yahshua, as we consider the activities of Egypt, of Israel, and how you took out your people. We pray, Almighty Yahweh, that you will bless your people, bless those who are worshiping you in truth, that they would come to know you and feel in their heart the real meaning of what it means to follow you. We pray, Almighty Yahweh, that you'll be with your people and guide all those who sincerely seek truth, that we might also be a tool in your hand to bring many more to the proper understanding of your word. This prayer and petition now we ask in Yahshua's name. Hallelujah. You may be seated. In yesterday's paper, there was a picture here of a girl in Israel, I guess in Jerusalem, called Passover preparations. She's throwing something into a huge fire. An ultra-Orthodox Jewish girl adds a piece of sponge to a fire set up to burn leavened items in a final preparation before the Passover holiday in Jerusalem. All leavened food, such as bread, is forbidden to Jews during the week-long Passover holiday commemorating the Israelites' hasty departure from Egypt. The holiday begins at sundown Monday. I got to thinking, you know, that's probably how Israel got rid of their leavening. I mean, they couldn't all run to the ocean, you know. They had to, it was in to get rid of it in your coast, so they had to burn it up in a big pile probably somewhere. Then, interestingly, right across the page, we have ready for the rush. Excited youngsters wait with anxious parents for the call to hunt plastic eggs in Saturday's egg hunt at Memorial Park. Truth with error, and that's what we're trying to do, is separate truth from error all the time. If you were an Israelite at this time under Moses and Aaron, we'd be on the road right now. Except there weren't any roads to speak of. We'd be leaving Egypt, heading for the wilderness. Imagine, however, that you were suddenly transported to a society where people ate one meal a day at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Their daily diet is sweet potatoes and tomato juice. While those around them are watching television, going to movies, playing sports, people in this community are studying books and listening to the sages speak of ancient wisdom. For the majority, it'd be somewhat of a culture shock to adjust to such a lifestyle, would it not? Being out of step like this with the rest of the world. Welcome to the world of the believer. We as believers are out of step with the world, aren't we? We rest on days where people work, and work on days others celebrate. We observe special holidays that come from ancient scriptures and ignore days the rest of the world honors. We shun certain foods most of the world relishes. And a week each spring, we eat strange flat bread. When summer ends and everyone else is working or going to school, we pack up and leave to keep a week-long feast camping in the wilderness, just as Yahweh had commanded. Well, we know that to follow truth, we have to be different, simply because the truth isn't everywhere. It's only in one small place. And we're expected by Yahweh himself to be different. Titus chapter 2, verse 14 reads, "Who gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from iniquity, and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works." A peculiar people. The Greek for that is periosios, and it means beyond usual. It means special. Probably the biggest reason, and you know, we sit and we wonder about Yahweh's ways and the world and what they do or don't do. One of the biggest reasons that people do not keep his commanded feast today is because they're not accustomed to doing it. These days are not what they're used to doing it. They weren't brought up doing it. Humans act out of habit. Habit. And it's not what they're accustomed to do. If it isn't, they ignore it and even attack it. The feasts separate and make us different. Yahweh commands anyone who wishes to worship in truth to come out and be separate. He says, touch not the unclean thing. Well, the world also operates from the majority viewpoint as well. The world is basically sheep following something. If the rest of human society suddenly gave up its holidays in favor for Yahweh's days, Yahweh's feasts, the majority would have no problem going along with it. They go along with the crowd. They do it, after all, with changing clothes styles, don't they? Changing home designs and car designs, got to get the latest. Changing haircuts. Human beings have been programmed to do what is in vogue, what everyone else is doing. And that's why when Yahweh talks about being called out, you're called out of something that everyone else is doing, not to do that, but to do something else. And that's what this feast is about, doing something else. And it's not just a Jewish activity or a Hebrew observance or an ancient peculiarity of days gone by. It's a special time commanded to all Israel by Yahweh himself. Let's look at Leviticus 23. We can't keep this feast without at least reading this once, and we'll probably read it several times before the week is up. But Leviticus 23:2 is where we see the command. Speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them concerning the feasts of Yahweh. And there they're defined right off the bat as feasts of Yahweh. I don't see the word Jew in there. Which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. Even these are, again, my feasts. 6 days. And then he starts off with the Sabbath. So the Sabbath is part of the feast, the weekly Sabbath. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest. A separate holy convocation, you shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of Yahweh in all your dwellings. And then he goes on and says, these are the feasts of Yahweh, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their seasons. So, these things are set apart, special observances for special times of Yahweh. In the 14th day of the first month at even is Yahweh's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That's today. Unto Yahweh, 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. This is the time the moon is full. Last night I was laying there under the skylight and they kept talking about this big storm that was supposed to come up. And they predicted it for sometime after midnight, I don't know. The moon was bright, you could see out. All night long you could see out because the sky was clear. So that's one way we know that this is a feast, because Yahweh led Israel out under a full moon. They could see where they're going, but he also, of course, led them with the pillar of fire. In the first day you shall have an holy convocation, a coming together. You shall do no servile work therein. But you shall offer an offering made by fire unto Yahweh 7 days. In the seventh day is a holy convocation. You shall do no servile work therein. So here we have the command that Yahweh gave to Israel to do this. Eat nothing but flat goods for a week. That may be strange to our culture today. But is it any stranger than people, like in this newspaper article, dressing up like rabbits and going out looking for eggs, colored eggs, and supposedly laid by rabbits, hiding them all over the place in the yard, and all in the name of the Savior's resurrection? They call that a non sequitur, something that just doesn't follow. The message of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is that if we desire to worship the true living Elohim, then we had better do it his way. Proverbs 14:12 says, there is a way that seems right to a man. And just go out and look around, you'll see what seems right to a man today. Out pursuing their job, careers, working. That seems right to people today. I'm talking about today. But the ends thereof are the ways of death. It says, ultimately, when Yahweh's kingdom comes to this earth, all former things will be wiped out. The memory of them will even be forgotten. Everything that's done today, everything that's being done to promote, to get ahead, to earn, to get wealthy, to build, that's all going to be even not just wiped out, but completely forgotten when Yahweh's kingdom comes to this earth. So, what's the percentage in that? Is that something we need to do? Or is there something greater that will last forever? Well, this is the first high Sabbath of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. In Exodus 12 is when they actually went out and sought Yahweh because they couldn't do it any longer in Egypt. Yahweh says, enough of this. We will bring you to pure worship. We'll take you out of that environment because we cannot continue on there, obviously. So this is what Israel was commanded to do. This is what they were doing. They left. And a whole group of people the size of Chicago left at night. Exodus 12:15 says, and this was the command, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. Even the first day you shall put away leaven out of your houses. For whosoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. And the first day there shall be an holy convocation, and in the seventh day there shall be an holy convocation to you. No manner of work shall be done in them, save that which every man must eat, that only may be done of you. So you're allowed to prepare some kind of food to be eaten, and that was allowed. That's really the distinction between a high Sabbath and the Sabbath, so that all may eat. And you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread. For in this selfsame day have I brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day in your generations by an ordinance forever. So, there is the command to do it forever, and that is why we're here today. Because forever has no end. Exodus 13, chapter 13, verse 3. And Moses said unto the people, remember this day in which you came out from Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength of hand Yahweh brought you out from this place. There shall no leavened bread be eaten. This day came you out in the month Abib. And it shall be when Yahweh shall bring you into the land of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, which he swore unto your fathers, to give you a land flowing with milk and honey, that you shall keep this service in this month. So a particular month we keep this time, Abib, and that means the green ears of barley. We find the only crop that was mature enough at that time. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and in the seventh day shall be a feast to Yahweh. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and there shall no leavened bread be seen with you. Neither shall there be leaven seen with you in all your quarters. A man wrote and said, can I just take it out to my garage, you know, get it out of the house, put it out in the garage. I have a separate garage, obviously. And then maybe when it's all over, I'll just bring it back in. I said, can't do that. It says, no leaven in all your quarters. That means all your property. And the Hebrew means kos, territory, boundaries. Hebrew, gabul. No leavening on your property. And it says, you shall show your son in that day, saying, this is done because of that which Yahweh did unto me when I came forth out of Egypt. This is what Yahweh does for us when we come forth out of sin. We keep these days. It's all part of it. But why avoid leavening? Why not refined sugar? Why not trans fat? You know, things that are really bad for you. Like things that people give up for Lent. I always wonder, you know, often why they focus on such things as food, you know, they give up, maybe beer or, you know. How about practicing sin, give up something there? I mean, make it worthwhile. But they never seem to, well, I don't even know what sin is, so it's sad. Yahweh's observances are different from man's in many key ways, and one of them is that Yahweh tells us how to observe them. See, we don't decide how we're going to do it. Other observances man does, he decides. Yahweh says no. Or they leave it up to a church leader to decide. An important differentiation between true worship and every other kind is that Yahweh makes the rules. That's one of the ways you can define true worship, Yahweh's rules. He doesn't allow us to worship him in any old fashion that seems right to us. Well, what about this leavening? Why the peculiarity of taking out something that leavens and then eat something unleavened for a week? What does that mean? Let's discover, perhaps, what it means, and then we can see why Yahweh deals with it specifically at this feast. The first seven chapters of Leviticus detail the different offerings Yahweh commanded Israel. And in this law of offerings, Yahweh specifically prohibited leavening in an offering that was to be burnt. Leviticus chapter 2, verse 11. He said, have no leavening with this. No meat offering which you shall bring unto Yahweh shall be made with leaven. For you shall burn no leaven nor any honey in any offering of Yahweh made by fire. Why honey? Because honey is the catalyst that makes the leavening tick. And you're not supposed to have that with any offering that's burned by fire. Burning by fire, of course, signifies Yahweh's consumption. Whenever the burnt offering refers to a burnt animal sacrifice, but also a grain offering. It was included with nearly all animal sacrifices. The burnt offering signified consumption, Yahweh's consumption. When an animal was completely burned up, then it was offered completely to Yahweh. And when the offerer placed his hands on the animal's head or on the animal, it meant his participation in that animal's death. In contrast, the leavened loaves in the Feast of First Fruits, commonly called Pentecost, these were eaten by the priests. So if leaven strictly represents sin, obviously it would not have been placed in offerings presented before Yahweh and then eaten. So we have to look for another meaning, something beyond maybe. One place we can look at the characteristics of leaven itself. The typology and the metaphor and even the way leaven acts as an agent. The main thing leavening does, and it does it real well, is to spread completely throughout a substance. So that's one characteristic we can surmise some meaning from. In Matthew chapter 13, verse 33, Yahshua was referring to this when he's talking, making a parable. He's always making parables, other stories. He'd look around, seeing something, and make a parable about it. Look around, see a rock, and then he'd talk about Peter as the rock. He was always making things very plain to people. Anyway, he says in verse 33, another parable spake he unto them, the kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven, which a woman took and hid in three measures of meal till the whole was leavened. So she spread it out in three different places, part of this dough, until it was all leavened. She did that because of what leaven does. It spreads. The truth does the same thing. We tell friends, we tell relatives, they go out and tell other friends, other relatives, and then the truth is spread exponentially and geometrically and all sorts of different ways. And specifically, Yahweh was emphasizing the action of leaven, how it works, how it expands. He says Yahweh's kingdom will grow in the same way. We're the first fruits among many brethren, hopefully. We remain true. And it starts small, and then it grows. He compared it to a mustard seed, you know, small grain, barely see it, and yet it becomes a very big plant. Matthew 13, verse 31. Another parable he put forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field. which indeed is the least of all seeds, but when it grows, it's the greatest among herbs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in its branches thereof. That's what the kingdom is like, how it grows, small and then big, as we talked about before. Yahweh typically takes something small and makes something great of it. He did it with Israel, the smallest, one of the smallest of the nations, and made him great. Like we mentioned, even his name uses the smallest, starts out with the smallest letter of the Hebrew alphabet, the Yod, and yet it's the most important name in the universe. So Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 2:9, "It is as it is written, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, neither entered into the heart of man." Doesn't even enter into our hearts the things that Yahweh has prepared for them that love him. We have no clue what's in the future, but it's going to be unbelievable. And here we are, slogging along on this old earth, doing the best we can, sometimes forgetting, never thinking beyond, you know, the ceiling of what Yahweh has planned for those who are faithful. Is it worth it? Oh, you bet it's worth it. You come to that point someday and you'll say, yeah, it was worth it. Remaining true, a little bit of problem and trial I had to put up with is nothing compared to this. Eye hasn't even seen or it hasn't even entered into your mind, the heart, what Yahweh is going to do with you if you're faithful. When it comes to eating unleavened bread, the message over and over from Yahweh was, do it, because on this feast, Yahweh took Israel out of Egypt. He freed his people from the bondage of sin of the world through the shed blood of Yahshua. Again, taking something small, flat, humble, and using it as a metaphor for something greater. Think about the facts. A death of the firstborn occurred at this time. Blood of the Passover, sacrifice, marked those found worthy to live. It protected them. But now they can't stay. Now they have to go. They have to leave the sin of Egypt. Yeah, they're covered, and most people today stop there. They stop there and say, I'm covered by the blood. That's all I got to worry about. No, you got to go on. That's what this feast is about, moving on, getting out and going. They had to leave the sin of Egypt. They had to obey Yahweh and do as he said every step of the way. They did it at night on this feast through the guidance of his Spirit. Led by the Spirit, they become then baptized into the Red Sea. And on the last day, they're completely free of the Egyptian army who was swallowed up by the same waters that delivered them. The meaning of Passover in this feast is powerful. It pictures what happens when a child of Yahweh makes a commitment to him. Well, let's continue looking at 11, because we need to understand that why we're doing this for 7 days. And why we avoid leavening for 7 days. Does it picture sin? Many teach that leavening represents sin. That's all they say about it. Others say it's wickedness, it's corruption. Still others maintain that leaven is doctrine. All of these, of course, have some truth, but none is the total truth. Let's look at Matthew chapter 16. Yahshua had been in a discussion with the Pharisees and the Sadducees about who he was. Obviously, they were curious because he was a threat. And they're very concerned about this man going around gathering hundreds of people at a time by his message. And they were concerned. And Yahshua said in Matthew 16:11, "How is it that you do not understand that I spake it not to you concerning bread, that you should be aware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees?" Then understood they now that he bade them not beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Their doctrine, things that they would conjure up. Again, ideas of men. They had all sorts of added things they added to the word and said, you have to do this, you have to do that. You know, your disciples don't wash your hands before they eat. I mean, that was a ritual. That wasn't just for cleanliness. That was a ritual that they said had to be done. Pots, washing of pots and pans and all of that. They had all sorts of rigmarole that they had to do. That's a doctrine of man. That's leaven of the Pharisees. And in their case, it leads to something more, which we'll see. Okay, let's turn to Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8 and verse 14. We have the same analogy, but directed to a different type of leaven. Here, it says, "Now the disciples had forgotten to take bread, neither had they any in the ship with them, more than one loaf. And he charged them, saying, take..." Again, Yahshua's using an example. I mean, using just pulling it out of the present situation and making a teaching out of it. "Take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the leaven of Herod." Well, we just talked about the leaven of the Pharisees. What's this other leaven? What is the leaven of Herod? Actually is referred to in chapter 3, verse 6 of Mark. So let's go back there. Chapter 3, verse 6. "And the Pharisees went forth and straightway took counsel with the Herodians against him, how they might destroy him. But Yahshua withdrew himself with his disciples to the sea." The Herodians, who were they? They were members of an aristocratic political group who favored the politics of a Herod Antipas, and thus they supported the Roman government. And they tried to trap Yahshua into not paying taxes to Rome. Remember in Matthew 22, Yahshua says, "Give to Caesar that which is Caesar's." Herod Antipas was married to Herodias. Maybe you remember that. She had divorced her husband, Herod Philip, while he was in Rome, and married this Herod Antipas, his half-brother. It was this divorce and remarriage that John the Baptist attacked and said, "This is blatantly wrong." He fearlessly condemned them to their faces, being illegal and immoral under Yahweh's laws. As a result, his head winds up on a plate. So this is the leaven of the Herodians, political in nature. So the leaven metaphor here deals with an evil disposition, hypocrisy, and those who are trying to trap Yahshua. Malice, wickedness, hypocrisy, all tied up in this leaven of the Herodians. Paul talks about the same thing, 1 Corinthians chapter 5. So let's go there. This apparently, most scholars believe, was written during the Feast on Unleavened Bread. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 6. "Your glorying is not good. Know you not that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Purge out therefore the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you are unleavened. For Messiah, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. Let us keep the feast not with the old leaven, neither with the leaven of," notice this, "malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." So when we eat the unleavened bread, we're supplanting malice and wickedness with sincerity and truth, symbolically. So next time you give a little piece to your brother, say, "Here, have some sincerity and have some truth." Ever notice how flatbread even looks humble, low, plain, nothing really notable about it, just lays there flat? It's kind of the opposite of a grand four-layer wedding cake. You know, it's up there and everybody, "Oh, look at the cake," you know. Women all get excited about it. And, "Oh, look how it's decorated. And, oh, that's so wonderful." Well, these Corinthians were proud of themselves. They were proud of their leaven. And leaven, I guess I should have continued on here. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 2, "You are puffed up and have not rather mourned that he that has done this deed might be taken away from you." That was the man who had apparently his stepmother. "For verily, as absent in body but present in spirit, you have judged already as though I were present concerning him that has done this deed." He said, "I've already judged this thing. You guys are proud of this evil you're allowing. I say, get him out of there and remedy the situation." So that's another whole other situation. Leaven, puffed up, thought they were really great. That was they were really practicing cultural diversity here. Anything goes. But then why would Yahweh command leaven in the peace offering and the wave loaves for Pentecost? Certainly not because of what leaven represents, but what it does. It starts with just a little. We're used in the same way by Almighty Yahweh. Small group that grows, small people, to create a whole batch of believers from just a small little core. The wave loaves represented the first fruits, which were leavened by just a little leavening. Let's look at Leviticus chapter 7, verse 13. This is the peace offering. And it was a celebration of a right relationship with Yahweh. Beside the cakes, he shall offer for his offering leavened bread with the sacrifice of thanksgiving for his peace offerings. And of it he shall offer one out of the whole oblation for an heave offering unto Yahweh, and it shall be the priest that sprinkle the blood of the peace offerings. So it was made with leaven. And it's the same idea. Yahweh is expressing good fellowship in this offering that was commanded, gratitude and obligation as well. It's kind of like what we enjoy. We sit down and, you know, you meet somebody, you say, let's go for lunch. People like to fellowship over lunch, over eating. In fact, that's where you get the word companion. It comes from eating bread. Come, meaning come together. Com, and panos is Latin for bread. So coming together for bread makes people companions. We eat together, and that's what this peace offering was symbolizing. So what do we know about leaven? First of all, it just takes a little. Anciently and scripturally, dough, especially sourdough, that's what we're basically dealing with here, was a small clump that was already leavened, already had the yeast in it, the spores in it. Part of that was saved in the next batch. They stuck it in there and started to grow again. And they took a little piece of that and saved it for the next batch, stuck it in there, and started to ferment, started to grow. The baker does the same thing today with his sourdough to leaven the next batch. My grandmother used to call it starter. Let's keep a little starter back. And then she'd get out there, you know, knead that bread, big old hunk of bread, dough, you know, and she's kneading it and working it and worked several hours. I don't know how she ever managed to keep up, but she loved making bread, and it was good when she was done. But that was, of course, leavened bread. Paul wrote, your glorying is not good. Know you not, the little leaven leavens the whole lump. So leaven works that way. It also works very slowly. It's a chemical process, really, of decay, which in many instances initiates all by itself if you give it the chance to do so. And the right elements and everything, you know, you got the sugar, the honey in there. It's got to have that so it can work on the enzymes work on it and you know, cause it to bubble up with carbon dioxide and puff it up and all that. So that's why they mix all these ingredients together so it'll work. Another parable, Yahshua spake unto them in Matthew 13:33. He mentioned that the woman would to do that till the whole loaf was leavened. So it's a pervasive influence. When Israel was in Egypt, they ate leavened bread. They were leavened by the error that they were being taught, what they were around, simply because of they were in that environment of Egypt. They did what the Egyptians did. Now, when it came time to leave, their freshly mixed dough was unleavened. What did it mean? It means they were about to start new lives in a new place, free from the corrupting influence of Egypt. Similarly, our society influences us in a powerful, insidious ways. We don't even realize it sometimes. Just because we're in that environment, we get affected by it. A little bit of osmosis works on us, spiritual osmosis. So if anything, this feast tells us that man's ways are corrupt. You've got to leave those ways. You've got to come out for 7 days to learn a lesson. You can be influenced just by being in that environment. You can be influenced just by being in that dough and become leavened along with the rest of it, if you're a piece of dough. Society, especially since World War II, has undergone dramatic changes and slowly but surely a corruption. It's unseen in any other time of history. And just as leaven does its work, it's very subtle. Social leavening desensitizes people and it influences people. Leaven is insidious. It starts small. Maybe someone recites an off-color joke. Without realizing it, we become part of the audience. A little leaven, before you know, you're sucked in. The corruption of the world is everywhere. It permeates everything. You can't escape it, but you can choose not to be influenced by it. We need to make a conscious effort to avoid it, not get caught up in its trends and everything else. Being around Yahweh's saints, keeping a feast for a week, puts us in a different mind frame, doesn't it? You come away feeling different, feeling completely different. Tabernacles especially has that effect on me. You come away with a whole different attitude. The things of the world don't mean anything when you come away having immersed yourself in such a spiritual goodness for a good week, and you just forget about everything else. And so we need that perpetual contrast that reveals the evil. You know, if you're always in black, you're never going to understand what black is until you see white. When you see white, then you can compare, wow, that black is really black. But you don't know black unless you also have known white. And that's the same thing with Yahweh's truth. You have to understand and be influenced by the spiritual goodness before you can see all the evil that's out there. And that's what we're trying to do, is show the contrast. We are examiners, aren't we? We go to the grocery store. Normally, we pick up something, some kind of meat, and you look at it. And what is this? Is it mixed with something bad? We look at it, you know, people walk around seeing this guy, you know, looking at the package. And you don't see too much of that going on. Although you do see more of that now because people are becoming more health conscious. But we're examiners. We examine our culture, what it's doing, what it's not doing, what it should be doing. We examine our food. We examine the scriptures. We have to be, because the truth is always mixed with error. We have to be examiners and separate it out. Leaven of the world is everywhere, just like the yeast spores, all in the air. It'll fall eventually and start corrupting anything that has that proclivity to be changed by yeast, and it will. So Paul warns us in 1 Corinthians 5, 6-9, he says, your glorying is not good. Know you not the little leaven leavens the whole lump. Purge out therefore the old leaven, that you might be a new lump. So let's try to be new lumps of unleavening. And then he says, because the Passover, Yahshua, the Messiah, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Paul, of course, was also speaking metaphorically, because when he says become a new lump, he meant unleavened and untainted by the world. The first two words in the Hebrew translated leaven, the first is seor, S-E-O-R. It means leaven four times and leavened bread one time. Actually, it means a leavened mass. We get our word sour from seor. And it's amazing how much of the English language is derived from the Hebrew. Basically, way back to the root word. It's one man wrote a book one time on it, the Hebrew words, Hebrew roots of English, and it's amazing how much. But sour comes from seor, sourdough or fermented dough used to make bread. The other word is chametz, and it means leavened bread. Yahweh wanted nothing sacrificed to him that was corrupted, which, of course, says volumes about our worship today. How can the world argue with truth when Yahweh says, I am the truth, and yet don't do what he says? How can people argue it doesn't matter how we worship? So long as Yahweh's in our hearts, so long as our hearts are right, there's a contradiction that just doesn't work. Either we follow Yahweh or we don't. You simply can't worship properly unless your heart is right. Unleavened bread, or matzah, was to be eaten for 7 days. No seor, or chametz, was to be found within the borders, anywhere on the coast of Israel. We just read that, Deuteronomy 16:4. That means you can't put it in the garbage to start and bring it back at the end, back into the home once it's over. Leaven applies more correctly to solids, while ferment, of course, refers to liquids. a number of ways you can leaven or puff up a substance. But it really, in the strictest sense, and a brother was asking about this yesterday, it's a chemical process. You know, popcorn is popped. It's a physical process. There's nothing chemical. You apply heat and the steam inside that little kernel just gets all excited and blows up. And then, the popcorn is produced. But it has to be a chemical process, not something done through physical means. So soda pop, which is just carbonated water and sugar infused with carbon dioxide, is basically a physical process. It's not leavened. So we don't have to worry about that during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Spiritually speaking, we've made a reference already to what Paul said, 1 Corinthians 5, which was, of course, in reference to this feast. But it's central to us here in the New Covenant. Here we find leavening working on two levels. The people were puffed up over their acceptance of this man's sin. Why? Why did they accept it? Well, they're from a pagan leaven past. This type of thing was part of their culture. The leaven of prideful tolerance was at work. And now the Corinthian assembly was puffed up with it, and they were celebrating diversity, as Brother Hawes would say, big time. Diversity of sin. At the same time, Paul was concerned that this man's sin would spread like leaven and they'd go from bad to worse. And then complicity, which is always the danger, starts with one and then it grows. Well, when it comes to unleavened bread spiritually, we can derive these lessons. Number one, it's tough. It's not an easy road. Yahweh said it'd be a narrow way. Leavening is hard to chew and swallow. I should say unleavened bread is hard to chew and swallow. It's usually kind of dry. Got to drink some water with it. It's not popular. That's the main thing. It's just not popular with a world that's deceived. And as it has been said, the doctrines of the truth are the most difficult to follow of all teachings. As the major face in Christianity and Judaism split, went down now well-paved roads, we as Yahweh's people, on the other hand, take a road less traveled and a road that's full of potholes, full of obstacles, things that get in our way we have to overcome. But that's how we become developed spiritually, strong spiritually. We have to overcome these things. Yahshua wasn't given an easy route either. He had to go through difficult times. And that's the way it is with Yahweh's people. Wouldn't be any different with us if it was that way with him. Being a believer means coming out of a comfort zone that so many are in today. And it takes a special kind of person to do that. It's not easy. It's difficult to be a trailblazer. It's difficult. Moses, now think about this. He had to go to the most powerful man in the world, Pharaoh, who had armies that were just totally, totally powerful, could overcome virtually anything, any other army on earth. This man had complete power. He could do whatever he wanted to do with all those armies. Moses had to go to this man and say, I want your workforce to be released. I want them, Yahweh says, to go out into the wilderness. Imagine the first time he had to approach him with this. Can you imagine the fear, the agony? Well, he was promised by Yahweh that he would have strength of Yahweh. So, even though we know that sometimes just thinking and doing is just a little bit different sometimes. So he had to be obedient to the truth. He had to be obedient to the faith, and it wasn't easy. Kind of puts a little bit more into perspective when we have to get a little bit nervous about maybe going to our boss and say, I want to take off for a week for the feast, How would you like to go to the king of the, virtually the king of the earth and say, let your people go. Imagine what his reaction would be. So anyway, unleavened bread, it's hard. It can break teeth if you're not careful. Standing on sound doctrine is not easy. It's hard. But with Yahweh's help, you can do it. Sticking with scriptural principles, you're not going to be popular. Unleavened bread is not popular. And so much more is that the case as we see the day approaching. But you'll find uncommon blessings if you adhere to the truth. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, verse 11. Yahshua promises us that we'll even be called blessed. Blessed are you when men shall revile and persecute you, and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. We have the preparation. He said, you're going to be blessed, but you're going to be persecuted. And then we have the result. Great is your reward if you will remain strong. Because the prophets were also persecuted. John 15:20, remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his master. If they have persecuted me, they're going to persecute you. We don't set the course, he does. We just do our level best to stick on it, stay with it, follow it. That means we may lose friendships, we may have problems in our families. Many of us do. Yea, and all that will live righteously in Messiah, Yahshua shall, not maybe, shall suffer persecution. 2 Timothy 3:12. So that's one of the important jobs of an assembly is to come. We come together and people can, you know, kind of unload and say, you know, I'm really having trouble. You know, what would you do in this case? So we can help them because we've been through it as well, perhaps. Luke chapter 9, verse 62. You see, we don't have a choice. Once we get on this road, we continue on to the end. We can't turn back. Turning back is worse than starting. Yahshua said it'd be better that Judah had not been born than to have gone and done what he did to betray our Savior. Luke 9:62. Yahshua said unto them, no man, having put his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of Elohim. Does Yahweh want an indecisive person in his kingdom? Someone who can't stick with it, doesn't really know, you know, one way or the other, doesn't really have a good feeling about something, isn't strong in his heart about something, kind of wishy-washy, goes here and goes there. Does he want that kind of person as a priest in his kingdom? Obviously not. You can't just dabble in the truth. You can't just play at being religious. Just playing doesn't cut it with Yahweh. It's all the way or nothing. And the word is crystal clear on that from Genesis to Revelation. All the examples we see, all the admonitions we find, it's be true and strong all the way to the end of death. The first commandment says, you will have no other mighty ones before me. So you have to make that decision when you're immersed. This is for all the marbles. But the day is coming when many will fail to stand. They'll be asked to choose between Yahweh, perhaps, and their families, or their friends, or their possessions. And they're going to be like the rich young man, unwilling to give it up. Remember that Yahshua talked to thousands. He convinced many. He chose 12, and they were faithfully following him through the good times, the trials, the defeats, the bad times, the joys. And yet, as we just read at Passover, how many were there standing with him? Zero. It was too tough. It was like that hard, unleavened bread. Not palatable, not easy to chew, not easy to swallow. We all have to make choices, and we all have to live by those choices, the hard choices. And those decisions don't stop when you enter the body of Messiah. In fact, they just begin. So are we ready for the tough choices today? Are we ready to give it up give up this world for the kingdom's sake. In the Hebrew, the bread of affliction is from the root anan. It means looking down, browbeating, abasing oneself. That's what unleavened bread means. It's not popular. Go to the average grocery store and see how much space is given to matzos this time of year. Unless you go into a Jewish store, of course. Just take a look around. See how much is dedicated to the truth. On the other hand, leavened bread is everywhere. It's in the rolls. It's in the donuts. It's covered with gooey, goody stuff, sugar and sweet and wonderful pastries, and the smells so good in the bakery section and sandwiches in the deli, and it's popular and it's soft and it's chewy and everybody loves it. Then try to find the matzos. Doesn't require much to eat. It's covered with sugar, cinnamon, everything good. That's what everybody wants. Little effort, lots of pleasure. The unleavened bread of truth, on the other hand, is quite different. It takes a lot of effort. It's not popular. We don't eat it for pleasure, but fulfill Yahweh's desire for us. The bread of affliction. It means putting Him first. And when we eat it, we're putting Yahweh first. The popular doctrine, same way. Mushy, soft, easy, doughy, demanding little or nothing. You can stretch them. You can pull them. You can modify them to your will. Whatever you want. Make them fit your lifestyle. Don't have to keep anything special. If I feel like it, I might, you know, make an effort. But, hey, I make my worship conform to my desire. You know, when we were in the churches, we thought nothing of going to church Sunday morning and stopping at McDonald's on the way home. We did it all the time for lunch. Never gave it a second thought that the day of worship, even though we had it wrong, was to be kept exclusively for Yahweh. If we had, I guess we wouldn't have been worshiping on the first day of the week to begin with. True doctrines aren't easy. It's a lot easier to go with the flow. The truth is a sharp two-edged sword. It cuts deep. Hebrews 4:12 tells us. The lesson of leaven and unleavened boil down to this. Are you willing to sacrifice for the kingdom's sake? Are you willing to give up the world? Are you willing to enter everlasting life? Are you willing to take the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth in your life and to give up the false, all those things that lead to sin and error and death? How about adhering to the truth no matter what? We only have one shot at it, brethren. We only have one life to live. I'm like a soap opera, doesn't it? Will we do the best that we can with what we have? We only have one life. What are we going to do? May Yahweh bless you and let us think on these things.